Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. On today's program, we're going to examine or take a look at how you can predict what's going to happen next, how you can predict the future. Now, when I use the word predict, I'm not using it in a mystical or supernatural sense. When I use the word predict, I'm talking about using your God-given mind, your brain, your logic, your reason, your knowledge, yes, your intuition, your gut, the Word of God, what you believe the Holy Spirit is teaching you or revealing to you. But we need to kind of open that up a little bit, because that means a lot of things to different people. But the overarching truth that I want to expose today is the fact that you cannot just give in to a spirit of passivity. You know, our culture and our media specifically, and when I say our media, I mean the mainstream news media, the entertainment media, the television, radio media, the internet media, the social media platforms media. All of those things are constantly bombarding us with information, points of view, or they're trying to sell us something. And if they're not trying to sell us something, they're trying to indoctrinate us or employ social engineering to sell us not necessarily, you know, a brand of soap or a brand of cereal, breakfast cereal, but they're using advertising techniques on a very high and sophisticated level to program your mind to go along with some political agenda, some social agenda, some so-called scientific agenda. In other words, you're being manipulated, just like every advertisement is an attempt to manipulate you to like and buy a particular product, whether it's a particular brand of automobile or it's a particular brand of running shoes or whatever. The purpose of advertising is to persuade and ultimately convince you to buy that product. And then they use selling techniques. So whether it's propaganda or advertising, and these two things are totally interrelated, the advertising industry, the advertising techniques are very much interwoven with what we could call programming techniques or mind control techniques. And you know, when I use the word mind control, I'm not trying to blow it out of proportion and freak people out. But I think it's important to understand that mind control has now become a science, and it has become a science for officially at least the last 125 years. Now, the reality is, though, that mind control is not just an accidental thing. Scientists, salespeople, military experts, political consultants, whatever, they have all studied, if they're any good, they've all been trained in precisely what it takes to change a person's mind effectively and to get a person or a whole bunch of people to go along with something or to buy something. And, you know, this is something that I've been observing my whole life, and I'm sure you have too, because for most of us, we grew up, and I think it would be dishonest for me to say I grew up around television. No, the television was in the living room or the family room, and it dominated the room. So I didn't grow up around television. I grew up with television, and I think that would be true for most of you listening, especially those of you that were raised in the United States of America. Okay, so what does this mean? Well, what it means is God, which this entire media system that I'm talking about does not acknowledge God, whether it's the entertainment industry or the news industry or the music industry or whatever. It does not acknowledge the reality or existence of God, for the most part, like 99%. So, there is a standard. Now, people who are secular humanists or call themselves secularists, they say that there is no God. We're all here by accidental random chance, which is called Darwin's theory of evolution. So over 200 million years plus, mankind randomly evolved out of nothing, maybe a pebble on Mars, I don't know. And then very slowly, you know, on a molecular level, and then from one creature to another creature to another creature, and finally, mankind, the Homo sapiens species, is born. But that's not really what happened. That happens to be the dominant belief system, but that dominant belief system is really an illusion, because many, many scientists, many, many great thinkers, writers, researchers, so on and so forth, they don't believe evolution is real or true. And during the last 25 or 30 years, the numbers of scientists and scientific researchers, etc., that have secretly, they secretly don't believe in evolution anymore, in growing numbers. Why? Because as time has gone on, there has been new research, there have been new studies, and these studies and this research doesn't reinforce Darwin's theory of evolution. It actually weakens it and makes it less and less plausible. But as it is in so many things, the scientific, medical, educational establishment runs itself internally like a mafia. And if you're a professor or you've been hired at a research institute or whatever, and if you were to depart from the party line, which is that evolution is true, Charles Darwin's theory of evolution is true, that's the only correct explanation for mankind's origins. As long as what you write, think, teach, and research conforms to that belief system, you're going to have a promising career. You'll be protected. You'll have money. Your articles and research will be published. You'll get research grants. You'll be able to keep your teaching position, et cetera, et cetera. But if you dare to come out publicly and give a scientific critique, for example, of the theory of evolution, your career is going to end rather quickly. You will no longer be a published scientist or researcher. You'll no longer get financial grants, and that's how many scientists make a living. you will no longer be able to work or be hired at excellent universities or colleges or institutes or think tanks or whatever. You will find that you are not wanted because you broke the taboo of daring to question what, in my opinion, is not really even remotely a scientific theory. It is a fervent religious belief. And to be a scientist and to challenge the theory of evolution is just like being in some religious movement or religious order and speaking theological heresy. You will be denounced and you will be challenged, et cetera, et cetera. Because ultimately, you know, the theory of evolution and Darwin's theory of evolution, the bottom line on that is that it is not a scientific fact. That's why it's still called, by the way, the theory of evolution. And the reason it's called the theory of evolution is because it's still a theory, and that simply means they do not have the scientific facts to prove that it is true. So since they don't have the facts to prove that it's true, then it has to be relegated into the classification of a theory. A theory is a opinion, a concept, an idea a scientist may have, but it's not a reality, it's not a truth, according to the scientific method, unless he or she can prove their theory. So the theory of evolution has never been proved to be a scientific fact. Now, that may seem minimal, but it's not minimal. It's huge, huge, because people have been having a public debate for decades and decades about whether evolution is true or not. And all kids and students and young people and adults who attend institutions of learning, whether it's, you know, elementary school or high school or a university or a college or whatever, they are required to take a certain amount of units of science, and they are required to study, but not only study Darwin's theory of evolution, they're required to believe Darwin's theory of evolution. And if you dared to challenge that in college or high school, your professor, or even in high school, with a high school teacher, your professor or your high school teacher would fail you if you wrote a paper, you know, saying that you disagree with the theory of evolution, even if you backed up the fact that you didn't believe in the theory of evolution, and you backed it up by impeccable scientific research and studies, you would still be failed. And you would experience a tremendous amount of backlash because you dared to challenge this religious belief called the theory of evolution. So, what is this about? Why is this essential? And what we have to understand is, and no, I repeat this a lot, but I'm going to keep repeating it because it's the most essential truth that I believe Christians and conservatives and people need to hear and know. I believe it's the most essential truth. And I wrote it in the title of my book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World. So what that means, what that title is referring to, is that right now, in this time zone in history, due to numerous factors, we, the human race, we in America, are literally in the greatest battle for the hearts and minds of mankind in the history of the world. That means there has never been a time in human history where there has been such an all-out war, an all-out clash of fundamental ideas, the fundamental ideas that govern our world, that create our society. There is a massive clash of ideas. Everything concerning Darwin's theory of evolution versus the biblical account of creation, communism versus capitalism, and you could go on and on. Oh, salvation. Either Jesus Christ is God and he can save you and there is eternal life, or Jesus Christ is not God. He's a mythology or something. Massive, titanic clash going on between the opposing viewpoints. Now, this is where it is extremely important for those people who call themselves Bible-believing Christians or Christians. It's extremely important for us as a culture of people to raise the bar, to look at things from a different perspective. And by different perspective, I mean we must, in a sense, mature rapidly, because our perceptions, our logic, our reason, our spirituality is at an artificially immature level. We're not looking at what's really going on in our world, which is what really affects our families and our children, etc. We're not really looking at what's happening in our nation and what is actually causing what's happening in our nation. We are continuing to think, continuing to behave, continuing to act just like we did 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago. We were acting in the same mode. And if we continue to act and think in the same mode, we're going to continue to experience the same results. And what are those results in a nutshell? The results in a nutshell are simply this. We, as people who claim to be Bible-believing Christians, we are watching our nation being stolen from us. We're watching our nation being forced into a very ugly and brutal future. Our nation is being transformed by hidden forces, and the transformation is going to be very ugly, very brutal, and very unpleasant. And quite frankly, I don't think most Christians are prepared for it. And the shock will be unspeakable. Because you see, as we've said on the Paul McGuire Report before, ideas have consequences. Bad ideas produce bad consequences. Good ideas produce good consequences. So we can't continue to operate under the bad ideas that we've employed before. Why? Why? Very simple answer. Why? Look at the measurable results of the ideas we used and employed. Look at, re-examine our ideas on evangelism and discipleship and reaching people for Christ. Re-examine how we attempted to occupy until Jesus Christ comes. And we need to seriously and aggressively face this, because how we think, the behaviors we have, the strategies we develop, our worldview, our logic and reason, they are going to, within God's sovereignty, produce the future that you and I are going to live in, that our children and grandchildren are going to live in. And I cannot emphasize to you as strongly as I would like to, but I cannot emphasize enough the paramount importance of focusing in on this. Because once again, we're living in a time unlike any other time in history. We're living in the last days, and that has prophetic implications. Although none of us knows when Christ is going to return, we do know he is going to return. But the question is, what are you and I, what are Christians and non-Christians, what are people going to do? How are they going to live in a world before the return of Christ? Because the ideas we have are producing massive consequences in our society and in our lives. And we haven't even begun to experience the intensity of some of these ideas. Now, if you were saying, and I know you are, and I'm saying, and I know I am, unless we collectively are deluded, but we're saying, why are we saying? Because we have one of the attributes of sanity, which is we reflect. We have personal and intellectual reflection. We contemplate. We review our ideas and thoughts and situations, etc. That's one of the hallmarks for a mind that is sane and rational. It's sociopaths and psychopaths that can do unspeakable evils and then think nothing of it. We're not like that. We have conscience as well as reason. So when you see the ideas, depending how old you are, maybe you weren't born when some of these ideas happened, but when you look back during just the last 50 years, and you see how radically our society, our culture, our nation has changed due to these new ideas that we've adapted, these new ideas have radically changed our nation, people, our institutions, and we haven't yet taken off in terms of the further acceleration that is coming due to the adaptation of these new ideas and belief systems. I wish I could find a way to say that more simply than I did. I think most of you know what I'm talking about, but all I can say is that literally we need to put our safety belts on, our seat belts on, because the ideas that we're operating our nation on have proven track records all over the world. We can see evidence of what happened to nations that adopted these ideas. and what the results were. And the results were horrific. Now, there's a huge, not a huge, there's a significant percentage of the mass media right now, to their credit, that is raising the question rather aggressively. There are a number of talk show hosts, TV talk shows, writers and stuff that are rightfully so correct, and they're being correct in that they're raising the alarm regarding very dangerous developments in our nation. And I'm primarily speaking of America, although these same developments that are dangerous are happening all over Europe and in many places of the world. And to say it in its most simplistic form is that due to a variety of factors, the United States is quickly becoming a totalitarian state. The European Union is rapidly becoming, whether it's individually or collectively, a totalitarian state. And nations all around the world that were once free to varying degrees are transforming very quickly into totalitarian states, dictatorships, where the people have no rights. And there are notable college professors and intellectuals, etc., in the United States of America, and large numbers of people who want to see, they literally want to see the United States of America transformed into a nation like communist China. Now, if you know anything, and most likely most of you know a healthy amount of information about what communist China is like, but younger generations have no clue whatsoever. And so, empowered by surveillance technology, powered by things like the internet, satellites, 5G, 6G, empowered by cell phones, laptops, all kinds of electronic communications technology. This new technology has spawned what people in the intelligence community called the Internet of Things, IoT, the Internet of Things. The idea is that every electronic device in your house or in your life can be, or most likely already is, whether you know it or not, plugged into the internet and connected to the worldwide grid. So what this means is that things that you would not traditionally think are hooked up to the internet are. So, for example, refrigerators, washing machines, dryers, all the computer, social media tech stuff you have, all the entertainment electronics you have, your car. And it changes the extent that this electronic surveillance penetrates and controls your lives, accelerates faster and faster each year that passes by, that it becomes dizzying trying to keep up with it. For example, I write books, so a book I write, I may talk about all these technologies. At the time of writing the book, there are people who doubt that I know what I'm talking about, because I'm talking about technologies that they don't know exist. But because I spend a lot of time researching, I do know that they exist. But literally, a year can go by, and now all the people who doubted what I said believe what I said because they know it to be true. But then I'll make some other projections, or I'll announce other technologies, and it will often be greeted with, oh, is this a conspiracy theory or whatever? No, it's not. It's just that people don't know how fast these technologies are being implemented. So, perhaps the number one nation in the world right now, which embodies what America, the European Union, and nations all around the world could very well look like and act like in the near future is Communist China. If you were looking for one nation to be the living example of what many, many other nations, including America, may look like in the future, Communist China would be the best model. Because Communist China has a unique blend currently of incorporating, one way or another, capitalist principles, capitalist ideas. And because capitalist ideas, despite what the university professors and teachers in America say, capitalist ideas work. They produce prosperity, jobs, profit, etc., etc. And the heads, not necessarily the useful idiots, the professors, the teachers, and people who just buy communist ideas like they were part of a cult, but the people on the top of these communist dictatorships, they know that capitalism works. They know that the principles of capitalism are what cause rapid economic growth when they're actually allowed. So Communist China has embraced a lot of capitalist principles, and it has caused their economy to explode with growth. But Communist China, although it has attempted to borrow many of the capitalist principles of America, Communist China is like a hybrid ideologically, because they then blend capitalism, they attempt to blend capitalism with communism and a totalitarian dictatorship. And so they have it's a weird mixture, but these hybrid nations that are part communist, part dictatorships, and part capitalists, that's very attractive to the international globalist elite. Because the international globalist elite, they are called capitalists, but they're really not capitalists. They are simply totally out for themselves. And they will use capitalism, or the globalists will use communism. They'll use either one as long as it makes them money and allows them to retain their power. And so, right now, where America is headed very, very quickly And once again, we have an example of when you do not have knowledge, you don't have power. Knowledge is power. You must have vision. You must have knowledge. Because if you don't, you won't be able to see where you're going. And because you lack any knowledge of history, you don't know what happens to a nation that goes down these particular roads. Because if you had any knowledge of history, you would know exactly where America is going to go in the next relatively few years based on all the historical precedents of nations which made similar choices. And if you knew what the result was of this, like what China is, you know, America, we're losing our freedoms, but we still have them. In communist China, they don't have the freedoms. Now, they're trying to take away our freedoms in the United States of America through electronic surveillance, the internet, social media, mainstream media, and being under surveillance through the Internet of Things. And what that does is it puts a great, huge, massive control grid on the people. And unless people act, think, speak, behave, and do only that which is politically correct, which is always a kind of socialist, Marxist, politically correct type dogma, unless you're willing to do that 100%, you're going to be classified and identified and watched to one degree or another. But you see, with communist China, they've taken it where you're walking around, you're under electronic surveillance 24/7, and there's a running numerical score that comes up on a real-time face of a person. And that numerical score is either going up or down depending upon the choices and actions and behavior of the person who's under surveillance. So if you were to consistently do things that were producing a negative score, like going to church or carrying a Bible or evangelizing, I'm just using religious things, your score would be plummeting. And that would make it impossible for you to rent an apartment or a condo. That would make it impossible for you to get a job or keep a job. All kinds of doors would be closed on you. All kinds of money that's being distributed, you'd be starving. You wouldn't have access to medical care, money, a job, anything. Why? Because your electronic score would be in the negative zone because you didn't give yourself over to groupthink and the totalitarian regime. And so it's a very efficient but very diabolical way of putting an entire nation under lockdown and control. Now, what's dangerous about this is that this same system is being assembled in America. We are all under electronic surveillance. But the average American does not realize just how far and just how all-encompassing and just how powerful this mass electronic surveillance is that we're currently under. It's not out in the open as it is in communist China, the result of the score, etc. It's all kind of hidden. But literally, with the flip of a switch, they could take our electronic communication systems and turn it into a communist Chinese style totalitarian government, literally overnight. People do not realize just how enormous the surveillance state is. And it is being allowed, it is being promoted, it's being financed. Our politicians on both sides of the aisle have sold us out and are not making any serious effort whatsoever to preserve our freedoms. Christians are asleep, and they're going to be victimized by this worse than any other group. And they should know about it. And people should be legally speaking out against it and legally and peacefully protesting. It needs to be something that people stand up for immediately, because once the door slams shut on this massive surveillance apparatus, there's no going back. And the inevitable result will be the persecution of Bible-believing Christians. Because you see, in every totalitarian or communist nation, those dictatorships simply cannot allow Christianity to flourish, Christians to practice their religion. There can be nothing in a society which challenges the authority of the state. The state becomes God. The state becomes all-powerful. It would be illegal, for example, to share your testimony or to evangelize or to read a Bible, etc. And we're moving in that direction quickly. And one of the ways you can recognize it is before the actual actions are taken, what happens is the media, the internet, and mass public opinion is manipulated to generate hostility and dislike for Christians in the Christian culture. And another way this is done is that you deliberately, in a secretive manner, you deliberately promote groups, cultures, peoples within a society that have as part of their set of beliefs huge conflicts of interest with Christians, or they have a hatred towards Christians, or they have anger towards Christians. Make no mistake about it, there is a subversive movement in the United States and other nations to energize all kinds of subcultures and cultures within the society, to energize them to persecute and to attack Christians. And they're heating it up even as we speak. So the critical thing here is to recognize that it's happening, to recognize that we can still do something about it, but we need to know what's happening. And we need to be intelligent and informed in how to respond, and our responses must be strategic. If individual Christians do that, then we don't end up becoming a communist China. We attain to whatever degree our constitutional freedoms and rights. But if we insist on going into this passive, apathetic mode where we live in daydream land, the end game is going to be very unpleasant. You're listening to the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. Visit paulmcguire.us. That's paulmcguire.us. And we'll be back in just a moment. You are listening to the Paul McGuire Report. This is Paul McGuire. If you observe television media, television comedy shows, the media in general, what a lot of politicians say, etc. You will notice that the spin or the bias is almost always one of attacking conservative values, attacking and mocking Christians and Christianity and Jesus Christ, attacking and mocking Christian morality. So the entire media complex, the entire internet complex, the entertainment industry is a gigantic propaganda machine, constantly chiseling away at Christianity. And that's done on purpose. That is not an accident. It's not haphazard. It is happening intentionally because the people that own and control all of the media, the mainstream media, the internet, the social media platforms, TV, radio, films, music industry, publishing, et cetera, they are all owned by like 12 at the max international globalist corporations. And the heads of these globalist corporations, and I know this is difficult for some people to understand, but they belong to very powerful secret societies which have occult beliefs. Now, if you don't believe me, read my books. I list the international globalist corporations. Many of them are international banking families. And then I list the secret societies they belong to. And the secret societies are always occultic. And they have occult or Luciferian or satanic goals. I know to people who have never done any research, this is like, you know, they think we're talking about a conspiracy theory. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's a reality. It's just that you've been deprived your entire life of any data, information, or facts about it. So it's like, it's the first time you've come up for air and you take a gasp to breathe and all of a sudden you've got to deal with concepts that your entire life you were brainwashed into believing these things couldn't possibly be so, but they are. And so these globalist corporations, they control deliberately the content, the messaging, the politics, the morals. They are intentionally programming the mass population, either here in the United States or Europe or wherever. They're programming the mass population to believe an entire set of predetermined beliefs regarding morals, sexuality, economics, religion, etc., etc. Why? They want total control. Now, right now, they do have total control on almost all media. By God's grace, programs like this are able to operate, but we're what would be called alternative media. They would like to remove alternative media because they don't want anybody to challenge or teach or expose the masses to facts and ideas that, even though they're true, it would affect the ability of the controllers to control everything. So, this is what it's all about. It's a battle for the hearts and minds of mankind. Now, in my book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World, which I strongly suggest you get. You can simply go to paulmcguire.us. By the way, we don't offer any of our books, with the exception of two, but we don't offer any of our books on Amazon and things like that. I don't want to go into the reason why. It's just I'm looking at things in the long term, and look what they're doing to so many Christians, and we've been attacked in this way also, being pulled down and censored and taken down off of social media because what they write or whatever doesn't agree with the opinions of the globalist corporation. Well, it doesn't take a rocket science to figure out that that could be done in the publishing industry also. So you need to be very wary about who you allow to distribute your books, etc. Okay, so in the book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Souls of Mankind, I did research on Rockefeller and Kissinger and the globalists and how they cultivated very carefully relationships with China. Okay? And they cultivated very carefully their relationships with China. And because they did, and they made all these secret trade treaties that would benefit the Rockefellers and benefit the globalist elite, trade treaties which promised the communist Chinese government of China, we will let you manufacture all of our products and we'll let you sell them in the United States of America. And we all know what happened. Artificially, and that's the word, artificially, China's economic power grew. Because behind the scenes, the globalist elite were making it grow for their own benefits. And it grew to enormous power. But the growth was rigged. It wasn't a fair competition between, like, American workers and Chinese workers. And that is something that you have to understand. So now, with the growth of not only the economy in communist China, but there's also the constant expansion of totalitarianism. And, you know, the tragedy is that I remember when it became very public in the news that America and American corporations were involved in all these business deals, these globalist business deals with communist China. And I remember specifically Pat Robertson. Pat Robertson has said many excellent things. I hosted two conferences for him, one on the New Age and one on Bible prophecy a couple of decades ago. And the man is very brilliant, but I must say that I disagreed with him strongly when I heard him say essentially what was the party line, that we should get more involved with communist China in trade and business, because that way at least we'll have an opportunity to influence communist China from inside regarding persecuting Christians. So the idea was that, well, if we become business partners with China, then we'll be able to influence China far more than if we were just criticizing them from afar. And if we do all these business deals with China, communist China, then we can help our brothers and sisters in Christ and get them released from the prisons and have them being, you know, stop having them persecuted and stuff. And Billy Graham said the same thing. And I was disturbed by both of the comments because, quite frankly, I didn't buy that. I thought that was a naive assumption. And I'm sure they were spoon-fed that assumption by the Council on Foreign Relations, by Rockefeller's people, by, you know, the same globalist interests that were behind all the trade treaties. So they were fed propaganda, and they repeated it. Now the problem with that is, and we can all make mistakes. So I'm not sitting here pronouncing a permanent judgment on either of these men. But the problem is when you have that much public power and that many people watching and listening to you, speaking out that mistaken idea publicly caused the U.S. to stop putting the heat on China regarding the persecution of Christians in China. So Communist China has continued. It has not stopped persecuting Christians. So all these business deals that we had with them, and now, you know, we have COVID, and we have a lot of animosity between us and China. But prior to that, we were, you know, best buddies. And out of that best buddy relationship, Christians were persecuted, killed, tortured. Chinese Christians were persecuted horribly. And by saying those words, that empowered and allowed the Communist Chinese government to continue to persecute Christians in China. So my point is, that is why it is imperative to have knowledge. Knowledge is power, to know what you're talking about, to think deeply, to be perceptive, and to use intelligence. That's something God wants. Millions and millions of our brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ were horribly and still are being horribly persecuted in Communist China with, among other things, their computerized mass surveillance social credit system. But these national Christian leaders who spoke out and said it's a good thing for us to have these trade treaties with Communist China, because then maybe we can have them stop persecuting Christians, that was totally false. And what that false statement did is it helped to empower and continue to this very moment the brutal persecution of Christians in China. So what I'm saying is it's not an option to be dumb. It's not an option to be ill-informed. It's not an option not to have the facts. Knowledge is power. By the way, you can get information in my books, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind, A Prophecy of the Future of America, Volume 1 and 2, Conquering the Matrix. All of these are on book bundle discounts at paulmaguire.us. That's paulmaguire.us. You are listening to the Paul Maguire Report. This is Paul Maguire. I want to read you something starting on page 348. From my book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World, where this chapter is entitled The Prophetic Role of China and One World Government. And I felt led in my research to include information on China in my book, and it's never been more important because of this electronic totalitarianism, because of China flexing its military muscle. There have been a lot of signals being sent by China regarding building up their military bases and installations and missiles, et cetera, and locating them closer to the United States of America, which would be a huge military asset for them in the event of a military conflict between us and Communist China. Communist China has been making very aggressive signals, and they want the American people and our government to know. They're using intimidation and bullying, but they're taking advantage of the current political administration, and they're pushing harder and harder. That's not a good thing, by the way. Okay, so it wasn't all that long ago that Rockefeller, and I have this in my book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind, Free the World. I talk about China, and let me read you a quote. Before I read you the quote, Rockefeller, David Rockefeller, wrote in 1973, and I have his quotes in my book here, as well as the whole account, that he wrote an editorial, a full-page editorial in the New York Times, August 10th, 1973, entitled From a China Traveler. And then Rockefeller said, one of the things he said in that editorial was, quote, "The social experiment in China under Chairman Mao is one of the most important and successful in history." Look, you would have to be a sociopath to write that and to believe that. Now, I'm not just trying to make a smart aleck quip, okay? I'm not just trying to just, you know, pathetically search for a one-liner. That statement that he said, "The social experiment in China under Chairman Mao's leadership is one of the most important and successful in history," that is like intellectual, moral, and spiritual obscenity. Why? Because the social experiment in China killed at least 50 million. It's hard to get the accurate numbers because there's so much lying. And that includes deliberate starvation, shooting people, killing them. He killed countless millions of people in the Communist Revolution. And then continued to kill, and to this day they have a ruthless dictatorship. Now, Rockefeller was completely aware of what I just said. And in light of that horrific brutality and mass murder by the Communist Chinese under Chairman Mao, to call that whole thing one of the most important and successful in history is psychotic. Unless you're Satan, you might call it China's Chairman Mao's leadership is one of the most important and successful in history. I mean, I'm serious. You have to be psychotic. You have to be depraved of a moral conscience to say that. Rockefeller is not stupid. He knew what went on, and he praised them. And that should be this was written in 1973. Yes, of course. But know that is the cold, dark heart of the globalists. They think nothing of backing somebody that would mass murder 100 million people. They wouldn't even blink an eye. All right, so I write, this is what I wrote after that book. At first glance, anyone reading Rockefeller's words praising China would assume that Rockefeller was a sociopath or delusional. However, Rockefeller is neither of these things. Rockefeller appears to have access to intelligence reports that the rest of us don't. Rockefeller knew exactly what really happened with Chairman Mao and the Chinese Communist Revolution. When he writes the above phrases about China, he knows what the American media, the American political class, and what the average American have no clue about. Communist China was artificially raised up to spread totalitarianism among the governments of the world, which represents Plato's philosopher kings of Atlantis, who ruled the masses by creating slave class, by creating a slave class who were programmed to be unaware that they were slaves. And then I talk more about China and Rockefeller and how they are behind the UN Agenda 2030, which is going to usher in not peace, love, and Woodstock. It's going to usher in a global totalitarian regime. And then I have more information on what really happened in Communist China. And remember, Chairman Mao, the Communist Revolutionary Dictator of Communist China, one of his quotes is, quote, "All power comes from the barrel of a gun." And what he means by that, I have the exact quote written here in the book. Chairman Mao said, political power grows out of the barrel of a gun. So understand that a hardcore communist understands full well that the means to accomplishing revolution is brute force, brute power, guns, bombs, etc. That's why he says political power grows from the barrel of a gun. The idea is that communist revolutionaries are not even remotely confused about guns and gun ownership. They know that the people or the group that has the guns, they're going to be the ones that win, and the people that don't have guns are going to be slaughtered, killed, and conquered, because it's all about brute force, and the most important brute force is a gun, because if a person tries to defend themselves from armed attackers that are going to kill them, and they don't have a gun, they're just like they're going to be slaughtered. And it's sad that so many Christians, and it's sad that so many middle class females that live in the suburbs, because they don't understand history, they don't have a clue what history says. They're operating mentally from a touchy-feely mode. And they think that, well, you know, I'll just dial 911 if, you know, the power goes out and there's violent riots in the street. It doesn't happen that way. And so their lack of knowledge about what does happen is going to cost them, unfortunately, their lack of knowledge about what really does happen is going to cost them potentially their lives, the lives of their children and their husband, et cetera, et cetera, and their parents. People don't understand this. Ideas have consequences. Good ideas have good consequences. Bad ideas have bad consequences. Any policeman, anyone who is an expert in not only law enforcement or military history or et cetera, will tell you that the people with the guns are going to determine who lives and who dies. And if the criminals and the psychopaths have the guns, then it's all over. In fact, there was a very interesting article, and I quoted from it in my book, The Greatest Battle, where a prominent author and researcher talked about the fact that of all of our freedoms, that all of our freedoms in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights really don't mean anything if you don't have the constitutional right to own and have a gun. And what he pointed out very eloquently was that having all these rights means nothing if you don't have the power to make sure that you can exercise those rights. So what that means is if you're surrounded by, 100 people with guns, and you're told you can't, read your Bible or whatever, that's it. End of discussion. End of discussion. The rights in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights don't mean anything, because you can't do anything about the situation. And so in my book, I quote Newt Gingrich on the article he did on this, and he reminded people that unless you have the right to bear arms, all of your other rights are useless and don't mean anything. Because having those rights, but not having the right or power to actually use those rights is ridiculous. So it's critical that we develop knowledge, because knowledge is power. And then take a primary principle of what the Bible teaches us. The Bible teaches us that man has a fallen nature or a sinful nature. That means man, every man and woman, is predisposed towards evil. So when you think about potential societal conditions, or if there was to be a mass blackout or riots across the United States, or any other number of potentially ominous scenarios, if you simply look at those things with a biblical worldview, then you take into account the truth, which is the knowledge that it is a fact, according to the Word of God, that all men and women are born with a fallen human nature. And we are sinners, and we are bent towards sin and acting out our fallen human nature. So if that's the truth, then it is, you need to be able to have the power to restrain evil. Because if you're trying to anticipate what people will do, John Lennon sang that song, Imagine There's No Heaven. And it was a very utopian, optimistic song about how the world will be one and we'll all love each other and blah, 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 blah. But the point is that that was a utopian dream, but John Lennon did not have a correct view on the nature of men and women, which is they have a fallen human nature. So you can sing all these lofty lyrics about love and peace on planet Earth, but that's not what's going to happen because man's nature is sinful. People are predisposed to be evil. Now, I like John Lennon's music. I didn't agree with a lot of what he said, especially after I became a Christian, but I liked his music. And I obviously wouldn't have wished any harm on him at all. But the point is, he was killed by some kind of psychopathic maniac. He was shot with a gun. And there's an example of the danger when a gun is accessible or a gun can get in the hands of a psychopath or somebody who's insane. And this guy killed John Lennon for no legitimate reason. Now, the problem is, John Lennon was singing about a utopian world of peace and love, but you see, he did not believe that people were sinners, that people had a fallen nature. The person who shot him and killed him for no good reason was acting on his sin nature and fallen nature, and perhaps worse than that, there was some occult programming involved. You see, that bent towards evil, which the Bible warns us about when the Bible analyzes mankind, people who have a faulty view of reality because they look at reality through the eyes of humanism and falsely assume mankind is basically good, are going to make the wrong decisions because they have the wrong viewpoint. And they will open up the door for all the rest of us to be enslaved, killed, brutalized, etc., etc. Okay. Again, a Christian, not only through studying and reading the Bible and thinking about the Bible, but by reading and thinking in and of itself, the Christian, the average Christian, should have the advantage in any situation, should have the advantage in life and in dealing with life, because it should be one and the same. If you're a Christian, you are a person that uses your mind, that thinks things through. You're strategic. That should be the synonym of Christian. To be a Christian and to be asleep and apathetic and completely, you know, out there in the twilight zone, that puts you, your family, and your nation in harm's way. So the key is, once again, the key is the Bible teaches us the importance of pursuing knowledge and wisdom and guidance. And to the degree that you and I as Christians are willing to do that is to the degree we will be successful. We will be overcomers regarding the things that the Lord has told us to do. God bless you. This is Paul McGuire. Visit paulmcguire.us. That's paulmcguire.us. Thank you for being an intercessory prayer warrior for this program. Thank you for spreading our messages far and wide. And thank you for taking the time out to pray and ask the Lord what you can do to help us with your financial contributions and donations. And all we ask is that you simply go to the Lord in prayer and ask the Lord, what should you do? And then whatever God puts in your heart to give or donate, do what God tells you to do. God bless you. This is Paul McGuire. Visit paulmcguire.us.